Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning, everyone, across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide in the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Wednesday, hump day, the 8th of February, 2023. Glad to have you along with us on hour number two, along with our producer, engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers. Zommers, I have not had a chance to say good morning to you, but a busy day. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Always good to hear from Trigvi and get a lot of interesting takes, as always, with the inside view on all these different topics.
No, that's why I love having him on, because he has a lot of practical experience. I mean, to tell you what it's like to be in the room with Joe Biden in some of these meetings, what he's really like as a person, that's not something that a lot of people could give us insight on. To give us insight on real life things that have happened, it just gives us another layer of perspective on the news, and I always appreciate him coming on and giving us his story.
Absolutely.
And also, Pat Kreitel, great to have him on as a crossover guest on every Wednesday. Pat's going to be in the studio here tomorrow and Friday for the show, I understand. So it'll be great to have him down here in the southern part of the state. And, of course, Trigvi said he's here in studio in a couple of weeks. So he'll be here in person. So
that's definitely exciting.
All kinds of people visiting us, Aaron. I only wish our new remodel, our new house was done.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Well, for those who don't know, we're getting brand new studios here at the flagship station coming up here in a month or two. So we'll be moving to downtown Madison soon. So that'll be very exciting.
A little bit closer every day, but still not quite there.
Not quite there. Bill Luter's coming up on the 9:15 part of the show here in about 10 minutes or about 5 minutes or so. He had a great cover story in the Isthmus magazine on the on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And we are going to go and go through that article with him. He's going to dissect the race for us, give us the inside nonpartisan take of this Wisconsin State Supreme Court that is absolutely vital. The primary is 2 weeks from yesterday. So the 21st of February is the primary. And this is very critical. And early voting began yesterday. So if you are in a community that allows early voting or has early voting hours, you could go to your clerk and now vote early on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. The actual election is the 21st of February for the primary. And then the general election is in April. Top two vote getters out of the four will advance to the general election. So we'll talk with Bill here coming up in just a couple of minutes on that race. Also want to remind you, the President of the United States, if you're watching on Facebook or Twitter, that's why I have my tie on today. President of the United States is coming here. Well, not to Civic. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, our owners, Sage and Crudy, are pretty connected. Wouldn't that be great if the President just stopped by to say hi?
Now that would be something.
I'm ready if he does. But the president will be in the Madison area. DeForest is the area at a union work shop there, talking about jobs and infrastructure. Hearing now that will take place somewhere around 1 o'clock. But again, these things are always a little fluid for security of the president. So we will be standing by. News director Terry Bell of Civic Media and myself will anchor that coverage. We'll break into regular programming when it happens. So we'll be covering the visit by President Joe Biden to Wisconsin a little bit later this afternoon. Taking a look at weather forecast around the state of Wisconsin. Don't forget there is a winter storm watch for our listeners in southwest Wisconsin, WRCE. Land, expecting perhaps 8, maybe a few more inches of snow if you're in the Richland Center area today. Otherwise, expect sunny skies right now for the day. They will give way to clouds later on tonight, as we can expect, again, snow up to 6 to 8 or more inches in the Richland Center area for tonight going into tomorrow. So be prepared for that. Also then for tomorrow, Tuesday, more snow continues and a high of 34 degrees. Moving up to the beautiful Wausau area, expect sunny skies today, a high near 40. Tonight, a mostly cloudy, a low of 28. And tomorrow, Thursday, some snow and then light snow and freezing rain. maybe an inch or so of accumulation possible. High tomorrow of 33 in Wausau. And a beautiful Amory, W-L-A-K land. Expect sunny skies today, a high of 39. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 24. A 30% chance of some light snow in Amory tomorrow, a high of 34 degrees up north. Turning to a couple of news headlines before we take a break and bring on Bill this morning. President Joe Biden delivered his second State of the Union address last night, telling Republicans that he wants to work together instead of fighting for the sake of fighting. Biden sought to connect with Americans by addressing various issues impacting the middle class, healthcare, and the economy were a large focus of his speech as he set the stage for an expected 2024 reelection bid. And again, he is in Wisconsin today. We'll bring you that when he shows up here in our fine state. The death toll from the devastating earthquake that hit Turkey and Syria on Monday has now surpassed 11,000. According to authorities, aid agencies and emergency workers say that the number will likely increase with many people still trapped under the rubble. The Biden administration told the Supreme Court yesterday that Title 42 will end in May when the COVID-19 public health emergency expires. Title 42 is a Trump-era public health authority that allows border officials to turn away migrants encountered at the U.S.-Mexico border in the name of COVID-19 prevention. And we haven't talked about it a lot this morning, or actually not at all, but we should mark the occasion. LeBron James became the NBA's all-time leading scorer on last night, surpassing the record held by six-time NBA MVP Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for 39 years. With 10.9 seconds left in the third quarter of the Lakers game against the Omaha City Thunder, James scored his 36th point of the game and 38,388th of his career. He stretched his arms in celebration as the supercharged crowd in Los Angeles went into a frenzy, as well they should. We'll get into a political frenzy. Well, not really. It's more of a conversation with Bill Leaders when we come back with this article on the Isthmus on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Stay with us. You don't want to miss it. You're in tune to the Todd Allball Show.
I would like to see a show of hands, nothing concealed.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 9:15 on a Wednesday, the 8th of February, 2023. Glad to have you on the show with us today at 9:15. We're going to welcome in now at this point our next guest, who is a wonderful guy. Known him for several years, having worked in the Capitol and watched his journalism and his reporting. We welcome in Bill Leaders, who is an independent journalist out of the Madison area and has a cover story. Well, maybe not the cover story. I'm holding up for our Facebook and our Twitter followers, Bill. I'm holding up the cover of the Isthmus magazine. There are a couple of lovebirds on there, and I would say the Supreme Court race is probably anything right now but a couple of lovebirds, but you do have the centerfold. If you open up, it's a great centerfold story in the Isthmus entitled Supreme Divide. We welcome Bill Leaders in this morning. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I appreciate you taking the time, because one of the things, we've had this show on the air now for just over, coming up on 3 months, and one of the things that I've really tried to do is bring on people that are looking through large issues with a nonpartisan lens and actually doing some great journalism. We don't pawn ourselves off as a journalistic show per se, although I try to follow journalistic integrity, but we're a talk show, and I think it's great for our listeners to have someone like you who has a history of being a straight shooter and looking at these things through a nonpartisan lens, because it does me no good if I'm bringing our listeners, one-sided information, what Todd thinks. I think it's more important that people find out the facts and then they can decide for themselves. I think that's just a greater service to people. So I appreciate somebody like you coming on the show.
Well, thank you for saying that. I mean, this is officially a nonpartisan race, although as always with Wisconsin Supreme Court races, you have conservatives and you have liberals and you have their supporters within the political parties, Democrat and Republican.
Before we get into the actual story, tell folks just a little bit about you, how long you've been in the journalism business and kind of your road and what led you to write this article for the Isthmus.
Oh, I've been doing this for about 40 years. I worked for Isthmus for 25 of those years as news editor. I worked for 4 years at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and then I was at the Progressive Magazine for 7 years, including 5 years as editor. I left the middle of last year to do something I've always wanted to do, is just to be a writer. to be a freelance writer and to write for the Progressive, to write for Isthmus, to write for the publications that I've developed relationships with. I write now for The Bulwark, a national website with Charlie Sykes and Bill Kristol and Tim Miller and all those good folks. That's what I'm doing.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, it's having been in the buildings, we call it the Capitol here in Madison, and seeing the way that you conduct your business. Bill's the kind of guy, when you see him coming, you think two things. You think, holy cow, I better have my facts in order because he knows what he's doing. And then number two, to go along with that, you're always well prepared. You're not someone who's going to ask a question that's just out of left field. You've done your homework, and you do a great service to your readers because you present the facts. And I think that's all any of us could ask for.
Well, that's very good to hear.
Going to this article, it's entitled Supreme Divide, and I read it. I thought it's fantastic. And I guess if you could just walk us through, I've got some things highlighted here in the story that I'd like to touch on. But first, just set this up. You start off by talking to Ben Winkler, the chairman of the Democratic State Party here. And first of all, you kind of lay the groundwork that this is a major race nationally. Tell folks why that is.
Well, for several reasons. I mean, it's certainly an important race for Wisconsin because the control of the Supreme Court, the majority balance of the Supreme Court, is up for grabs. There will either be liberals or there will be conservatives in the majority. There have not been liberals in the majority on our Supreme Court for decades. This represents a chance for that to happen. There have been previous chances for it to happen, but it never has. And so whatever the ideological balance of the court is after this election, is vitally important on the issues that the court will be taking up, which will include whether Wisconsin will continue to be one of the 13 states in which abortion is effectively completely banned. There'll be likely challenges, as there have been in the past, to the gerrymandering, which has given complete control of the legislature to Republicans, whether or not they get the majority of the votes. And there will certainly be issues regarding the 2024 election, both the rules for it that are in place beforehand and the challenges, which I guess now are likely to happen every time that there's an election after the votes are cast. So our Supreme Court will weigh in on those things. It will make those decisions. It will determine whether abortion is legal and whether the institution of democracy continued to be, rigged or pushed in the direction by political partisans.
And from the gal or the guy sitting home watching TV or listening to radio, we're going to be inundated, right? Because there are a couple of other gubernatorial races this year across the country, but I think a lot of national party types and partisans and ideologues are saying ground zero for the biggest race in the country in 2023 is this Wisconsin race. So it probably means, like it or not, we're going to see a lot of ads and a lot of money being poured into this race.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It may not happen until after the primary that the big spending starts, but there's already some campaign ads. The last Wisconsin Supreme Court election was the most expensive ever. The candidates raised and spent about $5 million each. This was between Jill Karofsky and Dan Kelly in 2020. And the outside groups that get involved in the races chipped in another $5 million. So it was about $10 million of spending, which is more than there's ever been on a state Supreme Court race. It's gone up steadily since the mid-2000s. So 2007 was the first big money Wisconsin Supreme Court race, and it's continued to grow since then. But $10 million is not a lot of money by the standards that Wisconsin's been setting recently. The governor's race last fall, there was a total of $164 million spent by the candidates and outside groups together. And I just tallied this. I don't think anyone has tallied it before, and I think it's kind of startling, but in the race between Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson for U.S. Senate, a total of $204 million was spent, most of it, or two-thirds of it, I should say, by outside groups. So we have 360-some million dollars of spending just on the last fall elections of Wisconsin, and now we're coming up to this pivotal Wisconsin Supreme Court race, which could have national implications because, how Wisconsin votes and whether Wisconsin rules favor a Republican candidate or allow a Republican challenge to the election results to succeed, as it nearly did in 2020. The Wisconsin Supreme Court voted just 4-3 to reject the effort by Donald Trump to overturn the state's election results. That's, but it's closer than anywhere else in the country. The 60-some challenges that he brought, the one he came closest to winning was in the state of Wisconsin because of the composition of our Wisconsin Supreme Court.
So obviously there's a lot at stake here for the reasons you stated, but let me just say that again in case people didn't catch that, because I haven't heard this number before, and I appreciate you bringing it this morning and adding this up. $204 million spent in the race for U.S. Senate between Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson. That's staggering.
Yep.
I mean, I was talking to one of my younger...
Coming from two piles, the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, Kelly's candidate spending, and then a group called Open Secrets, Kelly spending by outside groups. But add the two together and you get $204 million.
I was talking to one of my younger colleagues here at Civic Media this last week, and keep me honest, Bill, make sure I'm telling the truth on this, but I said, if memory serves, when Tommy Thompson ran, I believe, his second or third reelection campaign in Wisconsin in the late 90s, I think he set the record at the time for most spent for a gubernatorial race at $5 million. I remember that number being out there. Oh my gosh, Tommy Thompson spent $5 million to become governor. I mean, that wouldn't get you a state Senate seat today.
you'll see some of that in this Supreme Court election. The stakes are so high. There's interest in groups here in Wisconsin and all across the nation in the election result. So, yeah, you will see a few commercials between now and April election. There is a possibility, and this is something that I've written about several times, and I feel kind of like a Cassandra on this here, and maybe I'm being an alarmist, or maybe I'm just grabbing that possibility that is too small to care about. But there is a possibility that the question of the court's ideological balance could be decided in the February 21st primary. There are four candidates on the ballot, two are liberal, two are conservative. The top two vote-getters advance to the general election, which is decided on April 4th. The top two vote-getters could be two conservatives. They could be two liberals. If the candidates split their votes somewhat equally, and all four of the candidates running in this race are serious contenders, if the two liberals and the two conservatives are very close to each other in terms of the amount of votes that they generate, whether they're the most or not the most, you could have an outcome in which only conservatives or only liberals are the choice for voters on the April 4th ballot.
I agree with you. I've said the same thing and kind of been laughed at by some of my friends and colleagues, but I think you can't rule that out. That you're left with both either two conservatives or two liberals after the primary. So that's why this, and again, the primary is 2 weeks from yesterday. It's the 21st of February. Early voting has now begun in the state of Wisconsin and municipalities that allow that. So be aware that you could go out and vote early if your municipality allows it. In this article, talking to Bill Leaders here, this article from the Isthmus on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, there are four candidates. You set it up for us. Milwaukee Circuit Judge Janet Protasiewicz, Dane County Circuit Court Judge Everett Mitchell, the two liberals, and then you've got the former Justice Dan Kelly and Waukesha Circuit Court Judge Jennifer Doro, both conservatives on here. Then you go into a subheadline called Going Into Extremes, and you point out that Kelly and Doro are, reading here from your article, are both hardcore religious conservatives backed by pro-life groups, both graduated from Regent University Law School in Virginia, founded by televangelist Pat Robertson. So, you know, I was going to say not to judge, but I'm judging a little bit. Not necessarily your grade A law school here, Bill.
Well, I don't know that it's a bad law school, but it's a religiously affiliated law school and specifically religiously conservative affiliated law school. I don't know that they knew each other. I think it's a coincidence that they both attended this this law school, but it's one of the things they have in common, as is the fact that they were both appointed to judgeships by Governor Scott Walker. I think that on the issues, you could safely say that they will vote the way that conservatives vote, which is to be, you know, very, very hard on the rights of criminal defendants, very open to the the whims and wishes of the business community, open to tinkering with the electoral process of the sort that has resulted in complete Republican domination of our state legislature, and open possibly to the legal challenges that are brought by people who don't like when they don't win elections. So all of those things are guaranteed if the conservative wins, that they will be more sympathetic to those conservative positions.
We are talking to Bill Leaders, great journalist, has a cover story in the Isthmus Magazine on the Supreme Court race for the state of Wisconsin. These conservatives seem to be a little obsessed with what happens in our bedrooms. Going to ask Bill Leaders about that. Stay with us. You're not going to want to miss it. You're on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Allball Show is 9:33 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us today. If you are listening to us out in WRCE land in southwest Wisconsin, Michelin Center, don't forget you are under a winter storm watch for tonight into tomorrow. Maybe 6 to 8 inches or maybe locally plus on the snowfall totals, so be aware of that. Otherwise, sunny skies today, but that storm moves in tonight into tomorrow. Then for up in Wausau today, our listeners in Bull Falls Radio Land in the middle part of the state, sunny skies today, a high of 40 degrees. Maybe some lighter snow coming in tonight and into tomorrow for Wausau. And then for Amory, Wisconsin, up in northwest Wisconsin, WLAK Radio, sunny skies today, a high of 39. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low of 24, just a 30% chance of snow tomorrow up in Amory. If you do not have it, download the Civic Media app. It's free. You can get it anywhere. Take us with you, not just our show, but all the fine programming. Go to your app store, download Civic Media, and then go over to other stations. Scroll down to WRCE News from the Center. Click on that, and every day, Monday through Friday, 8 until 11, you can have Mr. Zommers and myself, a great guest like we have right now, Bill Leaders from the Isthmus Magazine. You can listen to us every single day. Also, don't forget, we are standing by the President of the United States, Joe Biden. After what a rousing State of the Union speech last night, he is making his first stop, Wisconsin, and specifically a suburb of Madison, DeForest, Wisconsin. Looking like the timing on that now is somewhere around 1 o'clock. News Director for Civic Media, Terry Bell, and I will help anchor that coverage. We'll break into regular programming when the President stops in. Again, welcome back to Bill Leaders from independent journalist and writer. One of the great ones, telling it down the middle like it is, a great cover story in this month's Isthmus Magazine. And if you don't live in a community that has the Isthmus, you could go to isthmus.com. That's I-S-T-H-M-U-S, isthmus.com, and you can read Bill Leader's story on the U.S. Supreme Court. Bill, or not U.S., is on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Bill, I want to go to your article now. And you get into some of the really great facts of these candidates here. I want to read a couple of paragraphs and then have you explain this to the listeners. Because it seems to me, as a reader, that the two conservatives seem to have a little bit of an obsession with what happens in our bedrooms. You write in your article, as in 2020, Kelly claims his personal beliefs about anything are irrelevant. It's a smart stance for him to take, given how extreme his views seem to be. In his application to Walker for the open Supreme Court seat, Kelly included a chapter he had written for a 2014 book, John Rowles and Christian Social Engagement, Justice as Unfairness. In it, Kelly likens affirmative action to slavery. Morally and as a matter of law, they are the same. And frets that allowing same-sex couples to wed will, quote, eventually rob the institution of marriage of any discernible meaning, unquote. He also go on to talk about, he called President Obama's 2012 reelection victory for, quote, the socialism, same-sex marriage, recreational marijuana tax increase crowd, unquote. So that's Kelly. Then you go on to Darrow a little bit later on in the article, and you write that Darrow, in 2011, her application to Walker for a judgeship, she identified the U.S. Supreme Court's 2013 ruling in Lawrence versus Texas as, quote, one of the worst United States or Wisconsin Supreme Court opinions in the last 30 years, unquote. You write, The case concerned a Texas man who was arrested and charged after police responding to a bogus call entered his unlocked apartment and found him having consensual sexual relations with another adult male. Darrell called the court's 6-3 ruling, which was struck down, that state sodomy law, quote, a prime example of judicial activism at its worst, claiming it's well beyond the four corners of the U.S. Constitution to declare a new constitutional right, unquote. What are we to make of this, Bill? What is this an obsession with the right here on what happens in our bedrooms?
Oh, I don't know if it's an obsession, but it is an expression of rather extreme conservative views. The comment that Dan Kelly made about how if same-sex marriage is allowed, he wrote this in that book chapter that you mentioned, the fact that it would be allowed will eventually rob the institution of marriage of any discernible meaning. That's a fairly extreme thing to say, and it's pretty clearly not true. I mean, he wrote that before the Supreme Court issued the ruling that guaranteed the right of same-sex couples to wed, but he included it in his application to the governor after that decision had been rendered. I asked him last night, there was a forum of the Dane County Republican Party that was attended by former Justice Kelly, and I asked him in the question and answer session whether he still believed that, that the institution of marriage is being robbed of all discernible meaning because gay people or same-sex people are allowed to marry, and he refused to answer that. We both happened to leave the venue at the same time, and I told him, hey, you didn't answer my question, and we talked for a while, and he still didn't answer it. But yeah, I think it shows a very stern conservatism that's being projected, as is the comment by Jennifer Doro about, you know, the Lawrence versus Texas decision being one of the worst decisions you've ever seen. I mean, basically what the court said is that consulting adults have the right to engage in private sexual behavior without the cops breaking into their home and dragging them off to jail. And she found that objectionable, that the court would rule and create that right for the people of this country.
I just find, as a former Republican myself, a longtime Republican who left the party in 2011, one of the things that we used to hear in conventions and meetings time and time again, keep the government out of my personal life. We don't want government interference. Government's bad. We don't want government. And here you have two conservative candidates for the Wisconsin Supreme Court who, again, just can't help themselves. They want to go into consenting adults' houses and determine what they do.
Well, of course, this all ties into the issue of abortion, too. While neither Judge Doro or Justice Kelly will say that they are anti-abortion and will certainly vote to keep abortion illegal in Wisconsin, that is absolutely the case. Their comments about abortion over the years have made that clear, that they are dead set against it. They're endorsed by a number of pro-life groups who are throwing their support behind these two candidates. There's really no doubt that they support the right of government to make decisions about whether a woman can terminate her pregnancy. They're fully on board with that intervention of government, as, you know, at the same time the conservatives like to talk about how they want government to play a lesser role in our lives.
So let's switch over to the other side now, the liberal candidates or progressive candidates in this race. The first one you talk about in a subtext or a subheadline called Skeletons in the Closet. And you turn to Judge Janet Protasiewicz, who is a judge now, says, you write in the article, justifiably touts herself as the candidate with the most experience, having worked for a quarter century as a prosecutor in Milwaukee before nearly 9 years as a judge. She declares that the current maps used to draw voter boundaries are quote-unquote rigged. She has embraced the label of progressive, an open pit of horror to the right, while at the same time supporting Republican-led efforts to expand the ability of judges to deny bail to unconvicted defendants who are deemed dangerous, as do all three of her high court rivals. She's also raised the most money, about $750,000 raised from the end of last year. Let's go back to this article, this comment you write here. She publicly declared that the current maps that Republicans drew are rigged. Well, as Matt Flynn, my colleague on Matt Flynn Director of the Afternoon, says, and he's an attorney, she's right. You know, if you apply the federal law, I mean, people don't know this. Legislators don't get to just draw whatever maps they want or shouldn't. There are actually federal and state laws that regulate this. And so Republicans tacked Judge Janet Protasiewicz and said that she, quote unquote, brought ill repute to the court when she said the maps were rigged. And I went back, and you know, you'll remember this, when former conservative judge, Republican David Prosser, attacked liberal Ann Walsh Bradley in her chambers around the throat. Now I would think that would be something that would actually bring actual ill repute to the court. What do you think about these comments by Judge Janet Protasiewicz?
Well, you know, she is inarguably the most experienced candidate in the race, Janet Protasiewicz, and as you said, she and Everett Mitchell are both. People, I think, are comfortable with the term progressive. They're being raked over the coals with some horrible thing in a state that has a strong progressive tradition that goes back to its founding. You know, they are people who believe that the courts have a role to play in making people's lives better. That doesn't make them activists or any more activists than Republicans with their own issues that they're willing to go to the mat for. But it does represent a view of the justice system as being something that can evolve in a way that brings more equity and fairness to our society.
So really, correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I want a straight down the middle answer for our listeners, because a lot of people, you know, they don't pay attention. And if you're not a political nerd like I am or a journalist like you are, a lot of folks don't pay attention. Like, I don't know who to vote for. I just want to know what they actually stand for. So I want to make sure I get this clear for our listeners. Probably the biggest skeleton, quote unquote, in Protasiewicz's closet is she's experienced. She has a record, right? So there's more things to say, oh, you had a decision here or a decision there that they can point to. But that's really the biggest, if you even want to call it a skeleton.
Oh, yeah. You know what they do? What the opposition research does is it looks at every case in which Judge Protasiewicz, or probably Judge Mitchell too, has allowed somebody to at some point get out of prison after they committed any sort of crime, who then went on to commit another crime, and to blame them personally for it, for not giving them a stiffer sentence. And there are dozens and hundreds and perhaps even 1,000 cases that have been decided by these judges over their years on the bench. So there's just a lot of material to look for. Obviously, you can't keep people in jail for the rest of their lives regardless of the severity of lack of severity of an offense. And obviously some people who get out of prison are going to end up back there for one reason or another. It's just a fact of life. But what the opposition research does is to try to find those cases and to hold the judge personally accountable for the actions of the criminal that was at some point in time allowed to leave prison.
It's the old Lee Atwater, the old Republican strategist from the 80s and 90s, the old Lee Atwater, Willie Horton playbook, where you find somebody like that, a convicted felon, and that's how they basically defeated Michael Dukakis, just by bringing out one of these cases like this. Let's turn...
Judge Doro has one, too. She has a case in which she let somebody out who went on to do something bad. So, you know, it's just a feature of our justice system. It's also a feature of our elections that candidates are scrutinized for any sign that they have sympathy or a sense of fairness toward people who are accused of crimes. And you will find, as you said before, in terms of all four of the candidates support the constitutional amendment to, or is it the resolution, I'm not sure now, on the ballot in April that will allow judges to take into consideration whether a person is dangerous and not just whether they're a flight risk when they're setting bail. So it's a kind of tough-on-crime position that they all adopt because they don't want to have those commercials run against them about how they're soft on crime.
That's an excellent point, because you're right. We saw this against Mandela Barnes in the U.S. Senate prior to the general election. They take one thing and they exacerbate it, exaggerate it, and suddenly now you're soft on crimes. You're absolutely right about that. Want to move on to a Judge Everett Mitchell. in your piece that you wrote here. You write, quote, but Mitchell may lead the pack in terms of the number of skeletons that, fairly or not, will be dragged from his closet. He led a crowd of chanting, quote, no justice, no peace, no racist police, unquote, at a 2020 protest following the police murder of George Floyd. He remarked in a 2015 forum that he didn't think, quote, people who steal from Walmart, unquote, should be criminally prosecuted for shoplifting. And in 2020, he reduced the bail of a man charged with sexual assault from $30,000 to $2,000, for which the man committed another sexual assault and a pair of robberies. That's just the beginning. That's just the beginning of Judge Everett Mitchell. We're going to go to a break
but
quick.
They're all kind of small things. They're just small things that are very likely to come up and then become part of ads.
Stay with us, Bill Leaders. We're gonna get the answer on the other side of the break. Bill will explain this for us. Bill Leaders from the Isthmus, stay with us on the Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Tyler Ball Show. It's now 9:50 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll have another hour for you after the 10 o'clock news coming up at the top of the hour. And then later on today, stay with Civic Media as President Joe Biden makes his first stop after the State of the Union address last night, right here in Wisconsin, right here in the greater Madison area. DeForest, to be exact, coming here to talk about jobs and infrastructure. We will carry that for you live. We'll break into regular programming across the Civic Media Radio Network. News Director Terry Bell and myself will anchor that coverage. So be listening throughout the day. We appreciate you staying with us as President Joe Biden visits Wisconsin. Right now we have Bill Leaders. He is an independent journalist, longtime journalist here in the Madison and Wisconsin area. He has a cover story in the Isthmus Magazine, a newspaper, I should say, this month. If you don't live in the Madison area and don't have a copy available to you, you could go online and read it for yourself at isthmus.com. That's I-S-T-H-M-U-S, isthmus.com. Bill Leaders' article, really great, on called Supreme Divide on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court Race. Bill, I'm sorry we had to go to break there. I kind of cut you off, but talking about these different candidates, working our way all through all of them, on the last one now, Judge Everett Mitchell, talking about these kind of remarks that that he made that may pop up if he'd get through the primary. As you point out, those were kind of smaller ones, but then you go on to write and you say in your article, you say, and in a 2010 custody battle, Mitchell's ex-wife accused him of emotional and eventually physical abuse, unquote, and revealed that she had reported to police that he had sex with her after she'd taken a sleeping pill. No charges were filed. Mitchell denies any abuse, and his ex-wife has asked that the matter be dropped. At a candidate appearance in Madison, Mitchell declared, quote, I know my left-leaning opponent's team leaked that to the press. Per Sandwich's campaign denies this. That appears to me probably the messiest thing, that if he get through the primary, that's going to be hauled out in a general election.
Yeah, I think they would certainly use that. I don't think that it's fair. I don't think that it reflects on his ability as a judge, and I don't know that anyone has verified the accuracy of the claims. And I think the fact that even his ex-wife has asked that this not be a matter that be taken into public consideration should matter somewhat, but this is the type of thing that gets dug up in elections, and it could be, you know, fatal to a candidacy if it is wielded the way that they are likely to do so.
In your reporting, Bill, have you found in talking to the people on both sides of this issue, here's the thing that I hear from progressive folks, that, hey, we just went through this with Mandela Barnes. He was a great candidate in many ways. He was youthful. He was intelligent. He was the sitting lieutenant governor of the state of Wisconsin. He had name one recognition. But, you know, they just put it bluntly, they used racial overtones in this race. They darkened his skin. They blew these comments about George Floyd out of proportion, and they went after him. And a lot of progressives.
Sure. They had the commercials with the cities burning and
right.
You know, the rioters throwing rocks at police cars, and then Mandela Barnes' face, like there's some, you know, direct connection between him and these rioters, like he's their cheerleader. It's just disgusting.
It is disgusting.
But it's part of our public. You know, we've had this happen now in our Supreme Court races for decades. The commercials in which, you know, you show the tough-on-crime judges showing the cell door slamming shut on the criminal defendant, and the other one, the sirens are going, and the high-key piano music is playing while they talk about how someone went out and committed a crime after this person didn't do the right thing. And it's phony baloney stuff, but it is the substance, such as it is, of many a Supreme Court race. I think people should look beyond that, acknowledge what the genuine distinctions are between the candidates, and vote according to that and not on the most outrageous thing that they can dig up on them to throw into a commercial.
But you know as well as I do in your years of reporting that this comes down to win. Like somebody else said this morning, it comes down to who can win, baby. I mean, it's win. And do you think that, are you hearing from progressives that, look, Judge Jana Protasiewicz just simply has less skeletons, less thing to throw against her. Her record, basically, that's it. And we just don't want to go down that road with Everett Mitchell.
I think there's that sentiment out there in the voting community. No one is going to sound it from, you know, like Ben Wickler, who I spoke to for this article. The chairman of the state Democratic Party isn't going to say, we'd rather people vote for this candidate than that one. They are both regarded within the party, the Democratic Party, and I think within, the larger progressive community as good, strong candidates, people who would make a good Supreme Court justice. Just as for the conservatives, I think they are probably fairly comfortable with the idea of either Jennifer Doyle or Dan Kelly on the court and to decide things through the conservative ones that they're going to decide them through.
Your final subheadline in this story that is in the Isthmus that people can read right now, going to isthmus.com. That's isthmus.com. Isthmus.com. Go to the Bill Leader story on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Your final subheadline is what's at stake. Tell our listeners this morning, Bill, what is at stake in this race?
Well, I'll let Ben Wickler make the point that he made to me is not only does a conservative win guarantee that there'll be continued support for things like gerrymandering that favors Republicans and maybe election rule tinkering that favors Republicans, maybe even sympathy for the Republican candidates who don't like the fact that they lost an election. Those are all things that would happen under a conservative, but he turns it on its head and says, but look at the possibilities that there are. As I said before, this if the liberal, if either Jana Protasiewicz or Everett Mitchell is elected to the court, it will be the first time in decades that liberals have had a majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and that creates a sense of possibility about maybe rolling back the dial on some of the decisions that have been rendered in the past, rolling back the decision, the law that was passed in 1849 to ban abortion in Wisconsin. That could be undone if there are liberals on the court, rolling back the winking at the gerrymandering that's occurred over the last decade, in particular the last couple of decades, that has given total domination of a state legislature to Republicans in a state that's pretty well evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans. That could be something that is that the court could come in and say, knock it off. You can't do that. The courts have been fairly tolerant of the notion that partisans who are in charge can tinker with can use redistricting to maximize their political advantage, but it doesn't have to be that way. Courts in other states have ruled against it, and the Supreme Court has basically said this is up to the states to decide. So the very important election outcome that could come out of this election, too, that we could have a different attitude toward the wholesale gerrymandering that's happened in our state. The liberal court could come in and say, stop it. We want to have a fairer process, not a rigged process.
Bill Leaders, independent journalist, such a great article. Thank you for taking your time today. It's in the Isthmus, isthmus.com. It's a wonderful article. Read it for yourself. You're not going to want to miss it. Supreme Divide is the name of the article, and Bill Leaders is the name of the writer and journalist. Thanks, Bill, for taking your time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Our pleasure. Stay with us. Hour number 3 of the Todd Allball Show is next.